roll, baby, on MMA Junkie Radio with Gorgeous George and Goz. This is what we do and why we do it, baby. We rollin'!
Covering MMA from all over the world, this is the premier stop for all your combat sports needs. MMA Junkie Radio from the Mandalay Bay Resort and Casino in the fight capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada. The lights are on and the mics are hot. It's time to get your MMA fix, junkies. Take it away, Big John.
Gorgeous George and Goz, are you ready? Junkie Nation, are you ready? Well, let's get it on.
Junkie Nation, what is up? Gorgeous George and Goz reporting for duty on a Wednesday. Sorry, it's usually a Monday-Thursday show, except we had to come in one day early because tomorrow is Thanksgiving. But we came strong. You'll notice I'm not going to give you an agenda of things we're going to cover. We got two monster guests today, and we're going to spend as much time as we can with both of them. The first one, as you can see, is Mark Ratner, who it was recently announced is going to be a member of the latest class of the UFC Hall of Fame in the contributor wing. And, of course, later in the show, we're going to have John Anik, another stud in his realm as a play-by-play announcer for the UFC. What's going on, Mark? How you doing?
First of all, John Anik's the best. I'm so proud to have him as a friend. And everything good. We're closed here for the Thanksgiving holiday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. So that's a pretty good thing. But I'll be here all day, or at least till 3 o'clock. So
yeah. You know, Mark, I'm actually going to introduce John Anik as a future Hall of Famer. You're
absolutely
right. That dude is money. He is money. So his day will come one day. But of course, right now, it's all you, and this is your fifth Hall of Fame that you'll be joining, including the four that are associated more with boxing. A couple based here in Nevada. Man, congratulations! You deserve it, and like everybody said in that video, that montage, you really really impacted the UFC, the sport, getting it regulated everywhere. I mean, thank you, thank you, thank you. It was all we can continue saying to you, because you brought over that credibility of all those years that you worked, you know, as the head of the Nevada State Athletic Commission. And right away, if Mark walked in the room, they were listening. Okay, what do you got to say?
First of all, it's much more than me. There was other people who traveled with me, and including Dana and Lorenzo, Amanda, but my lawyer who was working with us at that time, Mike Mersch. I don't like to take credit for everything, because it was a team, and I always want to let people know that. I might have been the face, but there's a lot of other people involved.
Well, that's very, very kind of you to say, but, you know, you wore the hammer. It'd be like if Goz got in trouble and he brought his big brother George to the principal's office, the principal would go, well, that's nice, but is your dad around, you know? And that's what you were. You were that father figure that came around, and I really think – you got people to sit down and listen. I mean, look, what'd you tell us one time? At least a couple dozen trips to Albany, New York? You never thought you would do that.
Maybe 29 or 30. We don't even know. We lost count, and mostly in the winter. That was the tough part. As I look back on it, and certainly, when we finally got approved in 2016, it made all those 8 years go by in a second, and it was all well worth it. And New York's one of the biggest markets for us, and it's still a thrill when we go to the Garden or even Barclays. It's just it can't be a major sport unless you have New York, and I'm very happy that we can go there.
What was another one of the big obstacles? If I recall, it was either Toronto or Montreal had a problem with the cage. I mean, was there a number two after New York, and was it that one, or were there some other states that were also, huge hurdles to climb?
Massachusetts was a tough one, and Connecticut, but New York by far the toughest. Toronto, I think it was more the commission there. They didn't believe in it, even though I think the director was a martial artist, but maybe they didn't want to work as hard. And then finally, when we got it approved and we had to go to Ottawa and meet with the different senators and those types in Ottawa, the first fight was 55,000, I think, with St. Pierre. So there was a pent-up demand, and what a great start there.
You got to meet with Ottawa's hockey team?
Not quite the hockey team, but at least the Senators.
Yeah, I know.
Quote, not the hockey team.
Every once in a while, I like to unleash a corny joke, and that was it. That was it.
Okay, yeah. That was good.
Thank you. Hey, what did it feel like? I mean, not to continue with the glowing remarks, but you know, it's pretty special—a fifth Hall of Fame. But what was it like when you heard it and when you saw everything that happened on Saturday? What were you feeling inside?
100% surprised. I was just sitting there, as we do, monitoring the fights, getting ready for the Valentina fight. And one of our guys, Hunter, said, take off your mask for a minute. And so I said, okay. And all of a sudden, I'm on the screens around there and on TV, there's this video, and I see my credentials, or I see a whole bunch of credentials. And I said, that looks like my credentials. Then I saw my face and I heard the announcer say something about Hall of Fame, and I was shocked. The most amazing thing is that somehow my wife and children left for breakfast that morning and went and got COVID testing so they could go to it without my knowledge. And so after the video, there they were. So the whole thing was surreal. And the video, I don't know where they got all those pictures from, but some in my office, I guess, but somewhere else. So that made it very special, yes.
How close? Well, it was 2006 that you joined the UFC, correct?
Yeah, May of 06, exactly.
How close did you come to possibly not joining them? You had a great job as the head of Nevada. You know, was it a slam dunk, in other words, when they offered it, or did you have to think it over, and did you at one point even consider just declining it?
It took, I think, about 10 weeks until one day, I think it was in March of 06, Lorenzo called me and said, are you coming or not? And I said, okay, I'll come, but we still have De La Hoya and Mayorga, or one of those kind of fights. It was definitely a De La Hoya. I said, it's Cinco de Mayo. I'll come as soon as the Cinco de Mayo fight's over. And the next Monday, there I came. So,
in fact, I wanted to tie in one question with Albany. All those trips to Albany, do you remember having missed either a big football game, basketball game, or boxing match, and just sitting there in Albany going, man, like, you guys are killing me over here in Albany and in New York?
I may have missed a UNLV game, but overall, no. I was never there for, like, weeks at a time. It was usually flying in and meeting with different political people, mostly on maybe on a Wednesday or Thursday, because they don't work too much either. You know, they get out of there on Friday. So for the most part, I don't think I missed anything. Maybe the warmer weather. It was cold there.
Habla español, amigo. Hola amigos, Danny Segura dropping in. Just wanted to let you know about MMA Junkie's latest podcast. It's Hablemos MMA, a weekly Spanish language show dedicated to all things professional fighting. Each Monday, we recap the major events from the weekend, plus we analyze the week's biggest news. We also bring you exclusive interviews with the best fighters, coaches, and experts in the Hispanic and Latin American scene. You can find Hablemos MMA every Monday morning on your favorite podcasting platform. Suscríbete y nos hablamos pronto. Chao.
Mark, so like George mentioned, you know, right now we're talking about the UFC Hall of Fame, but a lot of people are going to remember you for many things that you've been able to accomplish in your career. And right now I'm wearing my UNLV shirt, and we talked about that, UNLV basketball, there's boxing, you've done officiating. At the end of the day, is there maybe one thing you can point to that you want everyone to remember you for, an impact that you had?
Well, any impact would be in the combat sports world. But, you know, thinking about all the different sports and everything and being involved, I think the biggest moment besides combat was refereeing football at Notre Dame and being on that field and having Charlie Weiss yell at me. I think that was my big football moment. So I think about that one a lot.
You know, I was thinking about you yesterday because – George brought up Oscar De La Hoya, and some of these guys have teased coming back and fighting, but Roy Jones Jr. and Mike Tyson are going to actually do it. They're going to come back and they're going to fight. Although the rule set is a little strange and odd, back in your day when you were running things, if something like this came about, would you authorize a fight like that? And if so, would the rules be somewhat similar to what we're seeing that's going to happen this weekend?
Well, we're always talking about health and safety and no headgear. They're wearing, 10-ounce gloves, what my understanding is. There'll be no live scoring, but it would have been a very hard fight to approve because you have two 50-plus-year-old men fight, and they're both two of my favorites. The one thing that I firmly believe, and other people are now saying it, we can call it an exhibition, but once a fighter gets hit, he's going to hit back. And so I don't think it'll be just soft punches. I think they'll go out and fight. So I'll watch it, and I just hope nobody really gets hurt, and they both make money.
You know, some of those names that we brought up, they're legends in the sport. Is there a particular face or fighter that you miss seeing? A, because they put on great fights, and B, just because they were fun to be around and just the best professional they could be.
Well, I was very blessed to be involved with Hagler and Leonard and Hearns and Duran. So, those were the great times. One of my favorite fighters, in a strange way, was Sonny Liston. And I still have the picture in my office here. And one of my all-time favorites that passed away so early was Salvador Sanchez. But when I see De La Hoya or Bernard Hopkins or most of these guys, they're all very friendly. And it's nice. I like seeing them at fights. And it's just a big part of my life.
In your tenure here with the UFC and being involved in mixed martial arts, you live here in Vegas, just like us. If that was one of those night on the towns, right? You go out and have fun. Who are three people involved with mixed martial arts that you just connected with, that you would have a great time and maybe take to a ZZ Top concert or a Metallica concert? Who would be in that crew?
One I think of immediately, it would be Henry Cejudo. Because I think Uriah Faber, I think he would be fun to go to a concert with. Those two I think of. One that I really got to know pretty well is Weidman. Chuck Liddell would be wonderful to be with at a concert, though people would be just grabbing him and he probably wouldn't be able to enjoy it. No, there's a lot of great guys. And most fighters, when you have them one-on-one, are all great. It's just the entourages sometimes get in the way, but for the most part, those are some of the ones I think of right away.
And Mark, I wanted to ask you something. It just occurred to me now. It's not on my list of questions that I wanted to ask you, but you talked about the four kings, you know, Leonard, Hagler, Hearns, Duran back in the 80s and what a golden era of boxing that was. In MMA, do you feel like there's been, doesn't have to be four, it could be five, it could be 10. Has there been a collective division or group of guys that kind of reminded you of that, of that time? But I'm talking about the UFC.
I think the sport's a little bit too new to have that kind of like a round robin, these guys fighting each other. But I think that could happen. Let's see what John Jones does at heavyweight. There could be maybe a trilogy there if he were to beat one of these guys. Certainly Donald Cormier and John Jones had two memorable fights. And you're going to see maybe Conor, after the Poirier fight, maybe he comes back and fights Nate Diaz. I think that would be interesting. Or even if Khabib would fight him again. So there's a lot of good fights, especially at 155 right now. But I always like the heavyweights in combat sports. Somehow that it's just a different feeling there.
You know, Monday, we had our video franchise Spinning Backlick, and what we discussed was what's going on in the lightweight division, whether Khabib leaves or not. But we threw out some names like Tony Ferguson, Khabib, Conor McGregor, Dustin Poirier, you know, and a few of those are going to fight each other a couple times. Even Justin Gaethje, and I thought, man, I think that's our golden era That lightweight division is so popping because not only are they all great fighters, they all have big names, and two of them are just massive pay-per-view stars, including the Irishman, Conor McGregor. But for me, I'm thinking that's kind of who I would parallel maybe with the 80s foursome that we talked about.
Well, no, I think that's very, very possible. And I hope that we can have all these fights. And the COVID thing is what makes it tough right now, because without fans, it changes the sport. Boxing's finding that out now. To pay the money everybody wants, we need the fans. And there's a different excitement when the fans are in the building. But, yeah, the names you mentioned, those are all great fighters and would make great fights. So we're certainly hoping that that'll happen.
I wanted to ask you as well, now we got Allegiant Stadium. We've seen the Raiders in there. It's a beautiful stadium. I'm sure you've probably toured it by now.
I'm actually working there for the Raiders a little bit.
Oh, yeah? What are you doing there?
My title is coach to player cutoff operator, which means when the offensive and defensive coordinators are talking to the quarterback or the defensive captain, they have to they can talk for a while. Then at 15 seconds on the play clock, I cut them off. How's that for a job?
Dude, do you need an assistant? That sounds fun, man. Oh,
it is fun, yeah. So, I've been to Allegiant quite a few times.
Wow. I'm trying to think. When the defensive corner is talking to the middle linebacker or when the offensive corner is talking to the quarterback. But once it cuts off, it's not like you're left hearing what they would have said or not. It all cuts off?
It all cuts off. I can't hear either one talk. It would be fun, but some kind of a feed that I have to make sure is open for both guys, and then I cut them off.
That's interesting, because what if they're just about to give the golden nugget? Hey, don't forget they're about to blink, you know, and all of a sudden they get cut off. Anyway, that's an interesting job. That's pretty cool. But what I was going to ask you about Allegiant Stadium is, are you already envisioning the big boxing matches, the big MMA matches? I mean, your mind's got to be running circles. How they would do it, where they would walk in from, and right? Have you already closed your eyes and just pictured the crowd in there and the lights and then the two combatants?
Well, absolutely. And you could have a huge fight there, whether it's boxing or MMA. It just really depends on who the fighters are. I think Conor, whether it's Khabib or Nate Diaz or something of that ilk, I don't know if he could get 60,000, but I think you could get a huge, huge crowd, maybe, you know, depending how you price it and everything. But I think you get it easily 40,000 and maybe more. No, I can envision that very well.
We're going to break the record. It's going to go over 60,000. I do believe it's going to have to involve the Irishman. And if Khabib does come back, I got to believe that's the two that can make it pop like that on an international fight week. But this pandemic just puts us in a spot where all we can do is dream for now. You know what I mean?
Right. I'm hoping for this vaccine to get out there and that we can get back in action, maybe with fans, maybe this summer. That's our goal. The Apex is a perfect place to have fights without fans right now. But we want to go and travel again, go to the big arenas and give the fans what they want. We may go back to Abu Dhabi in January. We're still working on that. That would be on January 23rd, Conor would fight either here or there. So that's interesting too.
By the way, speaking of the vaccine, do you want to be first in line or do you want to let a month go by and see what happens, see what the scouting reports are from people that have taken it?
In the elderly group, I would be, I'm sure, in the first tier or however they'll want to call it. So yes, I'll get a shot. Absolutely.
Very cool. All right. I think Goz says he's got another run of questions. Let me hand it off to him.
All right.
You guys mentioned the fans, right? And Mark, being involved in so many sports where fans do matter, you know, there's that home field advantage, that home court advantage. You've heard how loud Thomas and Mac can get. In your opinion, which sport do you feel like is hurt the most by not having fans as far as the advantage that you get at home?
I think college hoops. I think because they're passionate, it's a little younger demo for the most part. I think the fans really play a part. The home court advantage is a little more there. it's probably worth 3 to 3.5 points. Football, it's a little more corporate, but still there's a home court advantage, home field advantage. I think the Raiders would this crowd here would be very, very electric. The Golden Knights have proved it. So I think all these sports need fans, and that's what we want. And hopefully, like I said, the summertime might be the time we can start seeing more fans.
I know it's early, but back to Hall of Fame. Have you given some thought about who you would like to induct you to give that speech right before you go on?
No, have not. In that class, George St. Pierre is in it. That's what it should be. It should be all about him. And I'll give a quick couple-minute speech. But it's about the fighters. And no matter what Hall of Fame, boxing or this, it's still, I'm a regulator. I'm behind-the-scenes guy. It should always be about the fighters.
That was a good question, Goz. I'm anxious to know when he'll come up with the answer, that'll be interesting. Okay.
You know who I'd like to see do it, George?
Who?
I think Kevin Ioli would put a lot of thought into it and really convey just how much Mark has meant to combat sports.
That would be good, but I was thinking Lorenzo, because he's the one that fished him there, and it would also kind of bring him back into the UFC family for one night. Wow. We should do a poll on Twitter.
Yeah.
Either guy would be more than fine, but something I haven't thought about for one second. We don't know when this ceremony will be, and we'll see. It'll be interesting, and I don't even know. Maybe they'll just do some videos, and you're going to have 10 people in that class with 5 from this year and 5 from next year. So I think the ceremony will be a lot different. So we'll see.
You had two great jobs that people, sports fans, or even just human beings would love to have. And I wanted to ask you, what has been your favorite aspect of both jobs? And for those that don't know, Mark was also the head of the Nevada State Athletic Commission for many years. I think almost as long of a tenure there as with the UFC, maybe even longer now with the UFC. And of course, with the UFC, he's senior vice president of Government and Regulatory Affairs. So what's been the best part of both jobs?
Well, I think in boxing, I liked when they were putting the fights together and they had to meet with both promoters, and even with King and Aram, when it was mutually beneficial, Trinidad De La Hoya, you had to work on both sides. There's officiating concerns. So I like that part of it. I like the weigh-ins. I'd be nervous weighing these guys. There's the whole world's watching. So just seeing things come together. MMA is pretty much the same when we go out of America and when we self-regulate. I'm doing everything I did as if the Nevada Commission was involved. But the one thing that I've been able to do is knowing a lot of the commissions, I can work with them. And what I tell them is, look, we'll help you. I just want to make you guys look great. And we'll help you from behind the scenes. But you're the commission, and we want you to take care of it. So I've been very blessed to be involved in both sports and combat sports. So it's been great.
And I gotta imagine that one of the toughest things ever was having to take $3 million away from Mike Tyson, informing him of that. That couldn't have been pleasant day at work.
Well, I have the big three things that happened in my boxing career. The fan man is still the most bizarre of them all. Oh, yes. And then the bite fight, and then the last big fight I was involved with was Floyd and Zab, where Uncle Roger jumped in, Zab's father jumped in the ring. We had a melee and wild. And I got criticized because Roger jumped in the ring. They thought we should have disqualified Floyd, which all he did was get hit low and get hit behind the head. It would have been a real mistake if we would have DQ'd Floyd. He went to the neutral corner, just stood there and watched the melee happen. And then we let the fight go to its natural conclusion, and he won the fight. But when I hear people tell me we should have DQ'd him, that's the wrong idea.
Just a couple more. And again, very gracious with your time. Thank you as always. I wanted to ask you, before you joined in 2006, but let's call it around the time when Zuffa took over, as you were regulating the sport and watching them, you know, from a distance, not being a part of them, did you think there was a chance they may not make it? Because as we all know, in 2005, it was that season of The Ultimate Fighter that really, really gave them a boost and I think gave them a second life, you know, a wind or whatever. I think Dana White's even on record as saying as much. It was really, really close to closing up shop. But what were you thinking in those latter years as now a new company had taken it over? It was no longer SCG. It was Zuffa.
Well, remember that, and I think I've discussed this with you before, but in the late 90s, maybe 97, I went on TV with Senator McCain on a Larry King show, and Ken Shamrock and the former owner, Meyerowitz, Bob Meyerowitz, and we debated, and I said we would never have MMA or the UFC with a sport that had no rules. And then in 2001, when we put the unified rules, I was on the phone with the New Jersey Commission, and then we the Nevada Commission approved the sport, and the first fight was Tito Ortiz and I think Manischenko. That was in September 01. I could tell that sport was I really believed it was going to go somewhere. I never thought to this extent. In my meetings with Lorenzo and Dana, Kirk Hendrick, we never discussed going anywhere out of the country. We discussed different states, and maybe we could you could help us in New York, but we certainly never talked about Brazil or anywhere else. So it's been very rewarding. I've been maybe not around the world, but all over the world. So it's been wonderful.
Last one for me, the guys. Meaning the announcing team had teased open scoring. That comes up every 6 months to a year, and a lot of people go, I'd love it, I'd love it, I'd love it. I think we've discussed this a little bit more, but can you tell us, have you warmed up to it, or is it something that you don't think will happen? You know, we always have new viewers, new fans of the sport that I think when they hear the powerful Joe Rogan and, of course, a former champ like DC and future Hall of Famer John Anik discuss something like that, you know, it catches a little bit of traction.
Still against it. I understand why what people say, but it changes the whole sport. It's easy to say that if a guy knows he's down two rounds in a three-round fight, maybe he'll fight harder in the third round. But there's also the guy who's up two rounds and he knows it, you just make try to lay and pray and get on top of them and just hold them down. This will sound strange, and people probably won't like to hear this, but one of the most iconic moments in combat sports, whether it's Michael Buffer or Bruce Buffer, in a championship fight, and the fight's over, it's coming to decision, and they say either still or new champion. It's such a moment you can't, and I would hate to lose that. With open scoring. I know that sounds sort of shallow, but I believe that that's a very important point. In boxing, I've seen it happen where they know they're ahead after four rounds and they're going to go to the scorecards, and somehow a cut gets worse and they say, hey, I was butted here, and I don't want to see that. And I've certainly seen in a 10-round fight with open scoring a guy run for the last eight rounds because he knew he was winning. So I'm still against it. Maybe an unpopular view with some, but I believe that, and I have not warmed up to it.
Gotcha. All right. Well, yeah, I think I'm against it as well, and I think I've gone the route of like an eye poke or a cup foul, you know, or something like that, where someone's ahead and they have in the third round, they can go to the scoring and someone may be enticed to not continue or continue. And so, yeah, I for some reason, I guess I think I'm a pessimist in that regard, thinking in the worst case scenario, But yeah, I'm glad you nailed that part about the announcement and still and new and everybody just having an anticipation and discussing it with each other. Who do you got? 10-9, you know, 10-9 the other way. You know, I don't know. There's a little bit of fun in that.
Special moment, and no other sport has it. So I like that moment. And you are, you're everybody's standing up and you're just waiting to hear one of the buffers say that. And Bruce is so dramatic about it. It's very cool.
Mm-hmm. Guys, make your predictions. How's UNLV Hoops going to do this year?
I'll go first. And all depends on the pandemic if they lose games. But I think that that Coach TJ has recruited very well. They're going to be young. They're going to be quick. I think they do a lot of pressing. And I definitely think that they'll be in the upper half of the Mountain West. I don't know if they can get a bid yet, but I think that this is the start of something big, and I think he's a very good coach. And I also think Coach Arroyo in football, he'll turn it around. This is a tough town to turn it around, but with a new stadium, I think that's a recruiting advantage he's got now, and I look forward to his teams getting better and better.
How about you guys?
I think if they could have held on to a couple guys from last year, they would have made the tournament this year. But I think they might fall a little short of that. But I think they'll be better than last year. But next year, I think they'll be really good.
Agreed.
All right, folks. There he is, Mark Ratner, a member of the World Boxing Hall of Fame, a member of the Southern Nevada Sports Hall of Fame, a member of the Nevada Boxing Hall of Fame, and a member of the International Boxing Hall of Fame. Now he'll be joining the UFC Hall of Fame either later this year or next year, whenever there's the proper opportunity to have a ceremony that will include, like you said, the great George St. Pierre as well. Mark, congratulations. That was really, really warming to us. We've gotten to know you over the years, and it's well-deserved. And again, the impact you made in MMA is just tremendous. So thank you for all that hard work you put out there.
I really like to come on because we can talk about other sports, and so I'm delighted that we were able to do it so quickly, and I thank you. I did do a show with Jerry Cooney a couple days ago. That was fun for me, too. So.
Oh, yeah, yeah, at the fight with Randy Gordon.
With Randy and him, and I like talking to them also. So I those are my two big shows.
I like to tease Randy because he voted against MMA, and he's kind of taking that on the chin and says, yes, I was a dummy, but he actually held up MMA in New York, and now, of course, he's a huge fan.
Right, that goes back a long time ago, and that was the same sentiment. We had a sport with no rules and or very few rules. So yeah, Randy was against it, and he's a big fan now.
Hey, Goes, we have the ability for the guys to say hi since John's already in the queue.
We could, yeah.
All right, let's have them say hi to each other.
Okay.
John Anik joining the program as well.
You know, I didn't want to be rude, but I was hoping I was going to get a chance to talk to this now three-time Hall of Famer. I mean, what other Hall of Fames can we get Mark Ratner into? I'm sure we could find one.
No, I've got enough. You're the Hall of Famer. I'm so happy for you and so proud of you. And what people don't understand about John is the homework he does and the notes he makes, and it's so extensive. And to be able to remember everything on a broadcast is even more exciting for me.
Well, I appreciate it sincerely, especially coming from you. You know, there's nobody's path that I would rather cross before a live event than Mark's. And it was interesting going over to talk to Mark, as I often do before the broadcast, as I did at UFC 255, knowing that his kids were essentially on their way or were going to be in the building, and he had no idea. So I'm glad that our production team was tight-lipped. And you should see, like, even our formats, there's no mention of Mark Ratner. It just says, you know, TBD. We were very tight-lipped, and, you know, you're just so richly deserving. And it sounds so trite when people sort of put over a human being and say, oh, but he's a better guy than even professionally. But with Mark, man, everybody, and even seeing, like, Diego Sanchez, you know, that summed it up well. Like, you won't let somebody cross your wake without a handshake and a smile. And that is a very powerful thing. And the last thing I'll say is that I had Mark Ratner on our Mouthpiece Boxing radio show for the first time in like 2003. And I was nervous, and he put me at ease pretty quickly. So, you know, I got mad love for you, brother.
Thanks. And I'm still a Patriots guy, and I'm looking for a Belichick to get a couple more wins this year. So
let's go.
I'm a Boston fan. So
let's go.
Mark, thank you so much for your time today. Guys, I really appreciate it. Have a great Thanksgiving with your family and stay safe out there.
Thanks a lot. Thanks for having me.
All right.
We'll see you, John, soon. Thanks.
See you, my man. See you in a couple weeks.
Well, Goes, there's no overlap. I got to do this live here, but I'm going to go from giving tribute to Mark Ratner, Boxing Hall of Fame. And I knew we were going to have John on.
Oh, nice.
It's got to be Lakers or Dodgers something. And I was actually going to open by congratulating Titletown 2020, Los Angeles, California. I was ahead of you, my gorgeous friend. I was ahead of you. I was going to come on and congratulate. I was probably going to lead with the Dodgers because I maybe feel even better for their fan base. But hey, I mean, you know. I mean, it's like we're a Celtics fan, but it's not as though we're totally unrepresented in the office. With
respect. Hey, yeah. I mean, I've given it your way, too. That front line of Robert Parrish, Kevin McHale, and Larry Bird gave me nightmares as a young lad growing up. How are we going to stop it? Bob McAdoo helped out. You know, he was able to spread the floor a little bit, but we just didn't have answers, man. Those were some days, John Anik, the 80s rivalry of the Celtics and Lakers, and hopefully we can get back to that. Now we're even on world titles. So, you know, we'll see what 2021 has in store for us. But how about those Atlanta Hawks? I don't know if you guys saw what they did.
I'm telling you, even before this latest move, I found myself looking at that Eastern Conference price on Atlanta, because stranger things have happened. You know what I mean? In terms of a team emerging seemingly out of nowhere. And I think Trae Young is such a wild card in terms of his ability to take over games that if you get the right surrounding pieces, Rondo and everybody else, and you get a couple injuries to some of the big dogs in the East, you just never know. So I got one eye on the Atlanta Hawks for sure.
Yeah, Gallinari joined them. And then the cat from Sacramento, they didn't match his offer this morning. I was looking at it going, whoa, okay, you know, because yep. We're going to be starting up next month, and it'll be interesting to see, man. The NBA playoffs was pretty special to me. That bubble they had, I mean, for them to pull it off was amazing. But, of course, I'm a Lakers fan, so I don't know how other people would feel about how the season went out. But I love it personally.
I certainly don't think for the Lakers or the Dodgers there's any asterisk. I think if you look at the NFL season, right, it hasn't been ideal. And even if you look at the Raiders, I know they played well against the Chiefs and they got a lot of guys back, but certain teams have had to deal with certain things during this NFL season that has made it so much less than ideal that they really shouldn't be playing that ensuing weekend. So the NFL season feels a little muddied to me, if I'm being honest. And if you want to say, oh, it's because Tom Brady's gone, then you're not really paying attention. But for the Dodgers and for the Lakers, those were legitimate sports seasons and everybody had conditions. And was Avery Bradley the guy who opted out? You got to feel for that guy a little bit, huh?
Yeah, he did. He did. I think, to be fair, I think it was a family member. A young daughter had a certain condition and you just weigh the two. So understandably, I think full support from his teammates. But yeah, I got to imagine there was still a time when – because, look, this thing unfolded over months where the early data that was coming in regarding the pandemic was, like, eye-popping. And then as we went through, we realized, okay, if we do, you know, certain things around, you know, create a certain bubble around a team or around a household, maybe we can do this, maybe we can do that. But by then, you know, obviously he had made his decision. But I wondered if he had thought about it a second time once he realized, right. Wait a minute, not only are they safe, the families are coming to them. And how about the fact that there wasn't even one infection in that bubble for 3 months?
Right. And I know we all love MMA Goes, but like, how about David Price? You know, that it just can't feel good when for whatever reason, right? You know, like Dante Hightower and Patrick Chung obviously opted out preseason for the Patriots. And we've seen the way things have unfolded, but I don't know. I got to think you're jonesing to get back in there. If you're David Price sitting home making that money or not making that money, I guess in his case, but seeing the Dodgers realize a championship for the first time in 30 plus years to not be a part of it, but to be on the team, that's got to be weird.
I am so upset right now. I'm going to be honest. John is so professional and so nice. And I had so many burns just in my pocket, waiting to throw at him. And he just kind of like, he B-rabbited me. This is
when we met, right? When we met, maybe there would have been more of me that like wouldn't be happy for the Dodgers or Andy Reid and the Chiefs. But I just think I'm old now, bro. And I like to see people happy, you know, and Josh Gross and all these starved Dodgers fans, I can't help but be happy for those people. And I don't know. Having kids has softened me, goes. We met, I had zero children. I have three now.
I'm still waiting for that day when it's just us and he goes, hey, you know this is on. And he just gets in your face and he's throwing beers and popcorn at you or something. But
get me drinking, goes. Get me drinking. The Boston will come out, I assure you.
Well, like George said, you know, I grew up in the 80s and that was a great time. But at no time, for as much as we despise the Celtics, we had a respect for them because, I mean, they changed the game. You know, they forced you to play at your best every game. And Larry Bird was just such a team player. And McHale and Parrish, none of them guys had egos. They were the consummate team.
Right. Well, and you guys know of my love for Kobe. And, you know, I'm glad they were able to bring it home the year in which we lost him. I still think for me, when I think about 2020, I don't immediately think about COVID-19. I think about where I was that fateful day in January when I, you know, at least for 2 hours, didn't feel like I wanted to go on after that Kobe news hit. You know, just not Kobe, you know. I think that's still just very raw with a lot of people. I mean, I only met him once and shook his hand, and I'll forever cherish the 180 seconds I had with him. But for people who had a lot more time with him and know how special he was and how much of a Renaissance man he was, it's still very raw.
Yeah. And this morning, I don't know if you heard the news, but we lost Diego Maradona, a huge superstar.
I saw that. Yeah. Dude,
arguably one of the biggest figures in all of Argentina history. Like, you know, obviously they've had their contributions in many ways. I'm sure they've had, you know, composers and other singers and politicians. I can't think of many. What is it? Ava Barone, I believe, you know, but I'm just saying that's how mythical Maradona is. I was lucky enough to go to Buenos Aires 1 year, and you can't drive more than a kilometer, because that's what they use over there, without seeing something that has to do with the national team and especially Diego Maradona.
Right. And man, did you see your guy just nail Buenos Aires or whatever? Said it better than I could.
Yeah.
Oh, hey, by the way, John, did you allude to, or were you at home thinking about Brendan Fitzgerald saying that Polish kid's name? Did you see how he squeezed it in 10 times in like before the first round was over? He was showing it off. God, who was that guy? I should have prepped like John Anik, but it was on one of the last Dana White Contender Series. You guys know who I'm talking about?
Yeah, and the name's escaping me right now. But so I was the one who had that name first surface on my radar, because if you recall, the week prior, Brendan wasn't feeling good. So I filled in on Dana White's Contender Series, and we were promoting the next week ahead. And I looked at that name and then heard that audio file. And singularly, I think it's the hardest name that we've had to pronounce. Some of these names are a little bit open to interpretation, but a lot of the Polish names and European names, a lot of people in those countries don't believe that Americans are even capable of saying those words, right? And I think there is some truth to that. We have sort of mastered Yon Jacek, Yon Jacek, whatever you want to say. But I tried to wish Antonina Shevchenko happy birthday in Russian, and the American mouth just doesn't want to make those sounds. So, you know, it's our devil that we know. But as you guys know, not a show goes by that we're not dealing with a name that is pretty damn challenging. Practice doesn't make perfect, but I always tell Buff, if you say it 50 or 100 times, you got a better chance of nailing it than if you say it twice before you show up.
Yeah, shout out to Brendan, man. He not only did he rock it, but I noticed he was going a little – I was like, okay, you're going a little overboard. You nailed it. We get it. But he literally said it a few times. He even forced Bisping to say it, and I think Bisping got it right. But anyway.
Yeah, it's Kashon Shkiewicz. Now it came to me.
Yes.
Kashon Shkiewicz. So it's very natural for us to have the double SH sound in there.
Mm-hmm.
Kashon Shkiewicz. But you can tell I literally said it 200 times. So it gets, it becomes Kashon. See, still screwed it up. Kashon Shkiewicz. God damn.
You didn't say Justin James 200 times.
There we go. Got to practice that one.
We had him on after we had you. We were when we remember we had you on. We busted your chops about that. We had him on, and he was giggling along too. He caught it.
Well, it's so funny too. And I think my saving grace with him was that he knew how excited I was for him, mm-hmm. given the circumstance of him getting that short notice UFC debut. And we tracked him down with our producers and called him and talked to him a few days before. And so I think part of my error was just that I was so excited for the guy to have that debut and then to have that moment. But we'll try to do better the next time, you know.
And we all were Jesse James at one point growing up. We're playing, you know, cops or not cops and robbers, but Indians and cowboys with your friends. So yeah, that's a slip up that no one has a problem with. All right, we got to go over a few things here. I blew the whole intro because as Ratner was exiting, you were coming in. But I wanted to tell everybody, wow, that's great. Today's show, we get a future Hall of Famer in the UFC. Excuse me, a Hall of Famer in Mark Ratner because he's a member of 4 Hall of Fames in the combat sports world. And I was going to introduce you as a future Hall of Famer, John Anik. I'm telling you, man, you're going to get there. I still have tons of admiration for when you arrive to what you've become.
Well, I appreciate it. I mean, we go way back, the three of us, obviously, and I'm not sure when I first graced the MMA Junkie radio airwaves, but I know you guys would never put me over just for the sake of doing it because we were friends and go way back. So not that I've had to earn your respect on the microphone, but I do believe that there have been times, especially Go's always asking me those hard-hitting questions, but no, I feel like I have earned your respect, and it means a great deal to me because, you know, I hold you in the highest regard. So I appreciate that. You know, I'm not going to hold out hope or wait for that Hall of Fame jacket. I it's crazy, though, to think about all the accrual of the years and the shows now at this point. You know, I tweeted that I had to fill in for Goldie at UFC 155. And then I took over full-time doing pay-per-views. I think it was UFC 208. So the next show will be my 50th pay-per-view. And, man, time is just ripping off the clock, but just trying to earn this seat every show out, not unlike a lot of people out there. And, you know, thankfully we've been able to work when a lot of play-by-play guys are idle right now.
John, I saw that article, something about your contract. Was that just a comment that flew out basically because you were trying to show everybody the passion you have for your job and how you want to earn your seat? Or is that really the way the contract's structured? Because if it is, enough already. Stop. You earned it. Get yourself one of those secure NBA contracts. That way, yeah. You can fly off a skateboard or something. You're still getting paid, my man. Like I said, you put in the work. You've done it. Give your family that security.
Well, I appreciate it. I mean, it's not guaranteed, and that clause is real. I wouldn't have just trotted that out there. I do think it's a good way to approach things, whether your boss is someone who is hard-nosed like UFC President Dana White or not. I think trying to earn your contract when you go to work is kind of a good way to make sure that not only you earn it, but you get a raise in the next one. But again, like I think if Dana White was unhappy with the live event broadcast team, he would move and move quickly to put in another team. So, you know, I believe at this point that I have earned his trust. Sometimes, unfortunately, the only time that you really know where you stand is when you do get that new contract. But I got a little bit less than 2 years left. And what I'm really trying to do for my family is go earn another contract and put myself in a position to continue to have the job in the sport that makes me happy. Because as you guys know, I would love to do NFL play-by-play, and perhaps that opportunity will come. But I do have my dream job right now, and want to do everything in my power to preserve it and make sure it continues.
I think you could do both. NFL play-by-play and the pay-per-views or fight nights the night before.
I appreciate that. Yeah, no, I mean, doing a game here or there would certainly appeal to me. It was harder to do like what I did in 2015 to step out of the UFC world and go do a college football game because I don't follow college football. But to do the NFL the way I follow it with 3 fantasy teams and doing the super contests and survivor pools and picking every game against the spread, you know, I'm so immersed in the NFL world that to step in on 2 days' notice would not frighten me in the least. So we'll see, man. We'll see. Hopefully.
Literally, you know that you've been watching college football 2 times a year for the past 20 years. You guys got to play the Jets every year, right?
That's right. That's right. Here's hoping they go 0-16. If Frank Gore were not on the team, I would be begging for them to go 0-16. But for that guy's sake, I wouldn't mind them going 1-15. But Adam Gase is a fraud. It's amazing. And I don't know if he's sober or not. I hate to make that allegation. Not like I'm always sober sitting around. But Adam Gase, to have gotten another job within that division, is that's the singular worst contract coach or player handed out in the NFL in the last 10 years. So what an embarrassing organization to hand Adam Gase that contract and that money. And, you know, you can be sure I'm waiting on my ticket for him to be the next coach fired. Never seems to cash. But yeah, you guys like my Cam Newton love here today, by the way?
I noticed that, yeah. One of the stud athletes from the Patriots in the late 70s when I was growing up, early 80s, was John Hara, I believe. He was a guard. John Hanna, excuse me. And when I see the old Patriot logo, it reminds me of that. And Grogan, I believe, Steve Grogan.
Steve Grogan, number 14 in your program, number one in your hat, right?
Yeah. Steve Grogan had this long-ass neck. I remember, you know, as a kid.
Yeah.
Whatever. Then we had a guy named Merton Hanks with the 49ers who also had a –
Yep, I remember number 36. Yeah,
he would do that duck walk, which made the neck look like it was gonna, like the head, like fall off, man.
Yeah.
All right, I've been hogging up the time here. Goes hit him with those hard hitting questions that you are.
Well, you know, John, I wanted to ask you about your job. I can't remember a guy who's actually come in to something that has been so traditional. For the longest time, you had Goldie and you had Rogan, and they did their thing. But it's almost like the moment you came in, you've been constantly having to make adjustments, whether it's COVID-19 stuff or just adding in a third person into the booth, but then rotating that third person. I have to imagine it's fun, but it's probably difficult to get that rhythm when guys are being switched in and out. But the one thing that I want to ask you about is throughout this time, you've also had to deal with some of these guys that they've put in. They still fight. Dominic Cruz still fights. Paul Felder still fights. Up until the last fight, Cormier, tell me about your emotions when you've had to call fights for guys that you've actually worked with that have been in the booth. What was that like, and how different of a dynamic was it for you?
It's a great question, and I'm glad you're giving it to me now because I finally feel like I have a thesis statement on whether or not I'd prefer to be home watching my dear friends and colleagues or working. I would rather be working. Having just gone through the Paul Felder, Rafael Dos Anjos experience, and Paul's a dear friend, and there are varying degrees to which I spend time with my broadcast partners on the road. You know, Rogan and I are supremely close, but we don't even stay at the same hotel. Oftentimes he's getting in late, whereas like Brian Stan would have been the total other end of the spectrum. We spend every waking moment together. And when he fought Vanderlei Silva, we hadn't called fights together. We weren't that close. And I wasn't really a dear friend of his at that time, but watching Paul fight Rafael Dos Anjos not working was just not fun at all. I kept wondering why my appetite was so non-existent, and I just was so anxious that whole day. So I think for me, I'd rather be working. I'd rather have Paul Felder be one of 24 or 26 competing athletes. The Cormier-Stipe series was hard, and I do stand by the calls in all three of those fights. But given all that was on the line for Daniel and given where our friendship was at that time in life, that was nerve-wracking for me for sure. But in a long-winded way, goes, I'll just say once DC starts making that walk, I'm not even thinking about it. I think it's just the preamble and the lead up and the fighter meetings and everything else that makes it uncomfortable. I just don't like watching my friends fight. And that extends to my broadcast partners, I think, in a much deeper way.
Another wrinkle that I'm going to predict, it may come, I think, this coming year. How about a female analyst in there with you? Laura Sanko. I believe that she's kind of earned maybe a tryout or whatever you want to call it, but she's done it with Invicta. She's great. She does great on the Contender Series. I think that's going to happen. Have you heard anything about that? And have you and Laura ever joked about it or talked about it at all?
You know, she and I have talked about it. I have certainly put her over for other UFC opportunities. And my bosses don't look to me for advice on how to structure the talent, but I think they know that she has a big fan in me, and I certainly would love to see her to my right at some point, hopefully in the not too distant future. You know, I remember Brian Stan, who won a WEC championship, often used to worry that maybe his fight credentials, as silly as this sounds, like wouldn't stack up to maybe Kenny Florian, who had fought for the belt three times, or DC, who obviously realized titles in a couple divisions. when Stan had a major title at home, right? So I think for Laura, the only thing working against her would be her limited professional fight experience. But not only has she fought, is she a good analytical mind, but she's comedic. Right. I think she brings a lot to the table from a personality standpoint. So I'm all for everybody getting opportunities. You know, Walt Harris is getting an opportunity on the desk this weekend, which I think is overdue. Bilal, remember the name Muhammad, is certainly overdue for an opportunity on the desk. And I can think of countless others as well. But yes, I have two daughters and love women and would be all for Laura getting that opportunity. And I don't know if it'll be 2021, but I do think that eventually she's going to get her shot. And what I really have said to her repeatedly, and she'll tell you this, all you need is your shot. I think all she needs is one broadcast with us, and she would have a seat in the future for sure.
Before you came on, we were talking to Mark Ratner, and one thing that came up that actually made me think of you was open scoring. And he was just talking about the dynamics that would change because of that. What about you? Your job would be completely different if you knew exactly what was going on in the scorecards. The way you would have to call the fight, I think would maybe change a little bit. Have you ever thought about that? Is it something that you would ever welcome into the UFC and how you would call a fight if that came about?
Well, we've thought about it extensively. I mean, Joe Rogan and I both are in favor of open scoring. I do think it would effectively change the sport. And in a general way, you can say that maybe our judges don't have the healthiest appreciation for the grappling game. So I have thought about this dating back to even like when Ryan LaFlair was fighting Damian Maia in a main event and thinking about Damian Maia and maybe people not appreciating his style at times and having him look up at the monitor and all of a sudden he needs a finish in a round in a fight that he's dominated. It would effectively change the sport. And I am in favor of it, but not without people coming to the wholesale realization that it effectively changes the sport and how guys would fight and how guys like us would call the fight. And I do think in a given third round, maybe unfortunately, we would be focused less on the technique and less on what was actually going on in the fight and more so on the ramifications of the losing fighter not being urgent enough. And us maybe not giving enough shine to the winning fighter because the focus is all on the guy who's trying to come back, or the fighter who's got nothing left in the tank is down on the scorecards and does nothing and he's getting booed out of the arena. So I think for the athletes, there are a lot of inconvenient truths that would come into this. And I don't know how fair it is to the athlete in a lot of respects, but I am all for scoring reform, open scoring, anything that can be done to change our antiquated, ineffective, terrible system.
Man, you brought up something that I always think about. It's the fighters sometimes when they're getting booed as they're walking out, and I can't stand it. It takes balls to be in that cage. And speaking of balls, how about Manscaped? Have you guys tried this lately? George, tell me about Manscaped.
I have those. I have those in my drawers.
The Anik and Florian podcast as well. I think I've seen Manscaped with them as well. So hopefully John can bear with us. Because, yes, we have a stacked show today with Mark Ratner and John Anik. And we do have to squeeze in our promotion for a limited time. Subscribers get not one but two free gifts. The Shed travel bag. We've shown you that many times. That carries all your goods. It's a $39 value. And the patented high-performance anti-shaving Manscaped boxers, which I'm rocking right now. That's why I can't show you beneath this Laker top here that I put on.
No, we believe you. Don't show us.
Okay, yeah. So, no, I have a pair of that. But, look, get 20% off free shipping and use the code JunkieNation at manscaped.com. Goes.
Hey, I'm telling you, I'm a firm believer. The ladies, they're all about it. You got to go to Manscaped. JunkieNation is your code. 20% off free shipping. Punch in that code and thank you for bearing with us there, John Anik.
Thanks, John, for bearing with us.
Hey, are you kidding me? I'm a radio guy. You can read all the spots you need to.
Hey, John, listen, I don't want to be you and do all this preparation but only use 30%. So I'm going to hit you with some of these questions here. When you run into fans, what do they want to talk to you about the most?
The 209 tattoo.
Okay.
Well, I think that has evolved over the years, but – certainly, I've taken probably just as many pictures with my arm as with my face.
Interesting. Okay, and what's a number two? Because I'm just curious if they want to talk like about your job or what just happened that night? Like, how does that work?
Yes, my job. And most often they're always very gracious and complimentary, and they want to talk about Rogan. I mean, not a week goes by that somebody in my life or not in my life reaches out to me to try to get in contact with Joe. So that is something that has certainly evolved over the last several years. But Joe changes his cell phone number pretty frequently. So best of luck tracking him down.
Also, the COVID scare that you had earlier this summer, what was the initial feeling like early on? I mean, we got to see some of that in the declassified series that they had. But just tell me, like, is that one of those things where because there's so many unknowns, your life kind of flashes before you for a bit?
That was those were some of the worst hours of my life. You know, Jared Gordon and I were leaning on each other pretty heavily because we both had come from South Florida, both had a negative test in Vegas, both boarded the same charter, and then had a false positive once we landed in Abu Dhabi immediately. We obviously didn't know it was a false positive at the time, so we were both presumptive that we had it and that he wasn't going to be able to fight and that I was not going to be able to call this pay-per-view. And the nature of our pay-per-views is such, and the play-by-play role is such, that it would have been a massive inconvenience for John Gooden to step in and do his first pay-per-view in that climate. So as much as the documentary focused on me potentially being away from my family for 45 days and going down to the fifth floor for a mandatory medical quarantine, yeah, I was thinking about all of that stuff. But it was also a huge show, and I was going to be leaving a lot of people hanging, not being able to perform and sort of honor the contract, you know, to the point I made earlier. So there was just a lot of anxiety for a lot of different reasons. When my boss, Craig Borsari, called me and told me that my follow-up test was negative, I mean, Christmas doesn't even begin to describe it. I was so happy, and then followed it up with a couple more negatives. But yeah, it was not ideal at all. It was very confusing having left Vegas clean and then all of a sudden popping dirty in Abu Dhabi. But all's well that ends well.
Yeah, for sure. All right. And the last one is, what would you rather do? A shoey on, you know, you're talking to Tai Tuivasa. He just won a fight and
right. He
makes you do a shoey. And let's just say that you get the clearance to chug a beer. You know, I'm being right. Silly here. Yep. Would you rather do that? Would you rather do the Justin Gaethje backflip? And don't worry, you got a couple spotters. Or when Valentina Shevchenko does her dance, you got to do some break dancing in front of her. Of the three, which one would you rather do?
All right, so we're definitely not doing the backflip, bro. So we can eliminate that right off the bat. I think I would dance because I'm not afraid to embarrass myself on national television, as I have shown multiple times over the years in many different ways. But anyone who listens or watches the Anakin Florian podcast knows that I recently did a shoey. But here's the thing. It was my shoe. And I spit in my own shoe. So it depends on the conditions of the shoey. If you're saying random dude's shoey in a COVID-19 climate with Tai Tuivasa's loogie in it, then I'm dancing with Shevchenko. But if we're controlling some of the variables in the shoey, I have no problem catching a little buzz for the rest of the broadcast and making good on that. So, you know, it just depends how much spit is in the shoe.
Gotcha. All right. Hey, by the way, remember the show that was your idea suggested to Bilal and your brother, or did it come from them?
So, yeah. I mean, so Cody Merrow, who is our producer, was hoping for a shoulder program under the Anakin Florian podcast banner. And I came up with Bilal as the guy that I wanted to build it around. And I came up with the name Remember the Show. Conceptually, Bilal deserves a lot of the credit for the game show. But yeah, putting my twin brother in there as Bilal's co-host, that was sort of a thought that I had, and I threw it to Cody and he loved it. People are kind of freaked out at the fact that there is an identical twin version of me with hair down to his shoulders. So I think it works. But Bilal deserves a lot of the credit because he's the brains behind most of the operation. And I don't know. I think the game show is pretty damn entertaining. We need to have the two of you go head to head some week.
Just let us know, man. It definitely looks like they're having a lot of fun, and your brother is just as talented as you are. And of course, we know Bilal. I knew exactly when he was going to be a part of a podcast or anything like that he'd be successful because he just oozes personality. And I hope that he realizes that and can give him a push, not only like you said, like possibly on the desk, but just continue to feature him and have cameras follow him because he's a character, law degree, too.
he's the man, and he's won 7 of 8. And thankfully there's a number 13 next to his name right now, but man, is it hard, right? Like for ball, he's got to win 10 of 11 to maybe get to the top 8. Right. And then hopefully you get that big fight short notice or otherwise. It's crazy that as good as he is, right, the night that he lost to Jeff Neal, it makes it very difficult at welterweight. I absolutely love the kid off the octagon, inside it. And yeah, man, we'll all keep pushing his cause and hopefully he'll get there.
Hey, John, I hope you and your family have a safe and happy Thanksgiving. Thank you for everything you do in our sport. You're an incredible talent. You call the fights and then you go do the post fights, whether it's in the octagon or, you know, digitally or whatever. You know, you nail the reads, you distribute the ball, whether it's a 2-man show or a 3-man show. You've gotten them to be better as well. You know, so honestly, you're like a John Stockton, and you're creating Karl Malones everywhere, because everyone who's up their game is because of you, my man. So keep doing it. Keep doing that great job that you do.
Well, don't lose my number. I appreciate it. You know, I will always take your call, and it's always a treat for me to chop it up with you guys. Happy Thanksgiving to you and yours as well. And I'll take that John Stockton love all day, my man. So thank you sincerely for every last word. And we'll see you guys December 5th from that tiny little UFC Apex, I guess.
That's what's up. All right. All right, folks. That's our show for today. Have a happy Thanksgiving to all of you. And thanks again to John Anik and Mark Renner. We're out of here. Go out there and be a champion.